Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Beauty Talk. I'm your host, Janice Tanell, for today, Sunday, March 24th. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, if you have a comment or a question for us or our guests, please give us a call at 914-803-4399. Again, that number is 914-803-4399. And I'm going to turn it over to Denise, and she has beauty news.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to tonight's show. Thank you guys for joining us. Just to start really quick, the Powder Group Conversations is a monthly series hosted by Michael Zavellis. It's a series that will take you into the world and minds of industry leaders from around the world and across industry and beyond. These Powder Group Conversations is sponsored by Beekman 1802, Krylon, Scandinavia, Omnia, Esom, Center Cosmetics, Cinema Secret, RCM Makeup, and Codex Labs. The Powder Group Conversations, a celebrating female founders, takes place Wednesday, March 27th at 12 p.m. It's free for the Powder Group members as well as union members and PBA members. Excuse me. The Powder Group panelists the Powder Group Conversations panelists will include Eugenia Weston from Senna Cosmetics, Ashunta Sharif from Ashunta Sharif Beauty, Rianne Silva from Beauty Blender, Melanie Mills from Melanie Mills Beauty in the Makeup Altar, Barbara Paldis from Codex Labs, Val Gerard from Antonym, Julia Dalton Brush from B3 Balm, Terry Opanowitz from Tablet and Very Terry, and Allison Hogue from Genuous Beauty. You can find program details for these conversations on thepowdergroup.com. And then Joelle Lee's Skincare is hosting a series of classes throughout the remainder of the year. So please save the date, April 21st through 22nd, the two-day chemical peel theory and hands-on class, June 9th through 10th. It's a two-day client consultation, skin analysis, and facial hands-on class. July 14th through 15th, she's back again with the two-day chemical peel theory and hands-on class. August 11th and 12th, the two-day client consultation, skin analysis, and facial hands-on class. September 9th and 10th, the two-day chemical peel theory and hands-on class. And November 3rd and 4th, back again with the two-day client consultation, skin analysis, and facial hands-on class. So registration for these classes will be opening soon. All classes will be held in Raleigh, North Carolina. The registration fee will be $997. You can hold your spot for $297, but payment plan options will be available. And again, registration is opening soon for those classes. And you can go to joellelee.com for more information on those. All right. Thank you so much for that. We are excited about tonight's guest, another Baltimore native beauty professional who's made her way to Atlanta, but her work can be seen all over the world. Welcome to the show, celebrity hairstylist Shar Wilson.
Hey guys, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. We appreciate it.
No, this is long overdue.
Yes, it is. So we're just going to jump right in then. introduce yourself to our listening audience and tell us a little bit about who you are, where you're from, even though I already told them, but just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
My name is Star Wilson. I'm originally from Baltimore, Maryland. I currently reside in Atlanta, Georgia now. I'm a hairstylist for television and film, but I'm also a full-time entrepreneur as well. I have two salons, one located in Baltimore and one located in Atlanta, and then I also have salon suites. Yeah, so that's what I do.
That's a lot. That is a lot. But we want to talk about all of it though. But that's a lot to break down. Why don't you start off also by sharing a little bit about what inspired you to become a hairstylist?
It's so funny because hair has always been a part of my journey. Like, my mom was a hairstylist. Like, I grew up in the salon. So it was always a talent that I had. Like, I remember doing my hair before school. Like, my mom used to let me use the Marcells when I was literally in elementary school. But I never wanted to do hair. It was just always, like, something that I was talented about. And, I mean, it was something that I had just naturally had, and I didn't want to do it for a long time. Like, I would duck people out to do their hair and all that stuff. Needless to say, what really kind of inspired me, or it was, like, already destined, is every time I would try to do something other than hair, it wouldn't work out. Like, I went to school to be an accountant. I wanted to be a real estate agent. I wanted to be all these different things at a young age. And then it was, like, as soon as I started taking the hair serious, it just took off.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, I don't know if I was really inspired to do it, more so like it was just written for me to do it.
Right. Nice. So you grew up in the salon watching your mother, probably helping in some way, whether it's helping to clean up, you know, I mean, or helping to shampoo. What was your assisting in the salon like when you were younger, before you were licensed?
Oh, so my aunt had a salon. Like, it was a family-owned salon, and I had to been, like, 11 or 12. My mom had a booth there. My sister had a booth there. And then one summer, I was, like, 12. She let me actually braid there. But before that, we would, like, shampoo. We literally would just hang out at the salon. And then when I turned like 16, I had a cousin named Kylie. I used to go to her salon, braid down her clients, sweep up, fold towels, just everything in the salon. But, you know, back then, that was pretty much the salon culture. Like, if you were younger, you automatically was like grandfathered in to be an assistant. I don't care if you know how to do hair or not. They like, yeah, wash some clients. Like, you're going to do something. You can't just sit around. So I've always been I didn't want to be an assistant, but they made me an assistant.
So you said,
so how did you learn how to braid?
I don't know. I feel like some people always be like, how do you know how to braid? Like, that was just always us. Me, my sisters, everybody in my family knows how to braid. Like, we was braiding our doll's hair. And now I see, like, even my nieces, they braiding their friend's hair in school. Like, so when people say they don't know how to braid, I'm like, I don't remember never not knowing how to braid.
No.
Like, we had to do our hair.
Yeah. So you said your aunt had a salon. So was that your mom's sister?
Yes. It's actually my great aunt. It's my mom's aunt.
Aunt. Okay. Okay. So wow. So it goes generations back.
Oh yeah. And then my grandfather, I mean, my uncle, they had a salon in White Lodge called the Montgomery Brothers. So they was, like, senior cosmetologists and barbershop. Like, it's always been in my family.
Wow. Yeah, so, I mean, you, even if you wanted to, you just had to be
doing
a stylist. Right.
Right, exactly.
So you were talking about the culture in the salons and how, you know, you just automatically was an assistant, whether you wanted to be or not. Talk a little bit about that culture a little bit. What was it like in the salons, the clientele? Like, what were the clients like? What were they asking for the most? to be something? I mean, I know you had the natural gift to do hair, but did it seem like it was something that you were like, once you, you know, were in there doing things, braiding and then eventually styling, did it seem like it was something where you were like, okay, I want to have my own salon?
Absolutely, because I think the biggest part of it, like you said, is like the culture, like the interaction with people. What really made me fall in love with like actually doing the service is just like being able to make people feel good and being able to connect with people and just those conversations. I didn't have so many conversations or even just going deep like in the chair where people would be crying, all types of stuff, but just that connection with people, able to make people feel good from the inside out. Not only are you doing their hair, but those are the people that they're sharing their stories with you. They're looking for you to kind of get them through that day. You don't really know how just a conversation that you had with somebody or just giving them some uplifting words, like, could change everything mm-hmm. about their day. Like, and I think that's the part of it I started to fall in love with. But the culture back then, to me, it was just like the salon is just like a meetup, like a meetup for all women from all different places, women connecting with each other, women just like, I don't know, it's something special. It's not like that anymore, but I feel like we're getting back to that. And okay. I feel like I've always tried to adapt that, what I learned when I was younger, to the salons now, just creating just a safe space for women to be able to be themselves.
Let me ask you, because you say that you said it wasn't always like that. You think it's getting back to that type of culture. Do you think how you got away from it, do you think it had anything to do with, you know, like you pretty much growing up and around hair and it's in your family? I mean, every which way you turn in your family, it's there. Do you think some stylists who just like, oh, they like to do hair, they got a license, they, you know, they went into a salon and started doing hair. Do you think that those type of stylists could have played a part into why the culture changed?
I don't think that per se would be why the culture changed. I think the world has changed, the way that we interact with people, the internet, all different things. You got to think, when we was coming up in the salon back then, you literally are just flipping through a book, picking a hairstyle. You might have, like, some people might have had cell phones, some people didn't, but the way you had to, like, interact with people, you had to call into the salon. You had to go in and sign up for an appointment on Saturday, or you may have to go get a ticket. I remember a lady named Tia who was a bomb stylist, and she did walk-ins at 5 a.m. So I don't know if it's per se those stylists as much as the world and the technology around it has changed. I personally am still one of them stylists that you can text and be like, can I come tomorrow? And I don't care how big I get. I feel like I remember that interaction. So I always apply some of those old school principles to how I operate now.
And you're still fairly young. And I think it's amazing how, because you grew up around it, you saw so much and it's so different. So you didn't necessarily start hair in this cell phone, Instagram culture. You know, you started back when you were in the salon when there barely was an internet. You know what I mean? Sounds like. Mm-hmm. So you've seen it. And so I like how you say those old school principles. Name one of those old school things that you learned a long time ago that you still practice today.
It's so many. I don't know. It's so many different things, but, I mean, like, the biggest thing for me is, like, the new culture of stylists where you can't get in touch with your stylist or not having a personal relationship or even, like, taking deposits and all that stuff. Like, I just remember it being, like, a relationship between your hairstylist and you that wasn't so difficult. So that's one thing I adapted. Like, you can be able to book an appointment or schedule an appointment without having to jump through a whole bunch of hoops. I don't charge people late fees. I remember people running behind and they'd be like, girl, I got one more person in front of you, but you can sit right there and I'll take you next. Like that type of thing. Instead of turning people around and doing all that. I mean, I understand that people value their time and all that stuff now, but it's just certain things that people appreciate it because you literally never know what people was going through just to get there that day. Like, everybody's not going to tell you everything. So just being compassionate about, you know, and stuff like that, that's definitely something that I felt like I adapted. And also the biggest thing I adapted from the old school was taking care of people's hair, like hair care. Like,
that's huge.
People don't really practice hair care as much, I've had clients that an older stylist told me a long time ago, what makes a good hairstylist is being able to keep the hair on their head. So I've always adapted that. So along with me being like an extension stylist, I have clients that I've been knowing for 14 years because I've always taken care of their hair underneath of that. So those are some things.
That's amazing. And that's huge, you know, taking care of people's hair. And I hear some stylists today say they take care of your hair, but in all actuality, they really don't. The fact that you said that you didn't charge a late fee that's huge to me, because, you know, so many stylists will tell you up front they charge a late fee, but there's no penalty for them when they're late, I don't necessarily mean like, oh, they're still working on somebody's hair and they don't touch you, like you're supposed to be there at 2 and they don't touch you to 2:30. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about they're not there.
Absolutely. And I see that all the time, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just, I don't know. I think a lot of stylists would disagree with me when I say I don't charge late fees, but that's just always been me, giving people grace, giving people, you know, you have to, like, people give you grace in life, so why wouldn't you return a favor? Now, if somebody's like 2 hours late, it's something different, but just because you sit 10 minutes behind, it's not going to change my day.
Right. I love that. Well, you mentioned, you know, the older stylist saying what makes a great hairstylist is taking care of people's hair or saving their hair, actually. What else do you think makes a great hairstylist?
A great hairstylist to me is just being like an all-around, just good customer service, treating people good. Making sure you hear your client, hear what she wants, hear what her expectations are for her hair, what type of direction she want to go in, because everybody's hair journey is going to be different, and just making sure you're not making it like a one model for everybody's hair, like making sure you're giving them their individual attention, like every client doesn't use the same product, making sure you have your product knowledge on what you should use for each type of hair, understanding their textures and stuff like that. So that makes, to me, a great hairstylist.
Nice. I love that. So you own two salons, and you own a salon suite.
Mm-hmm.
How did the salon suite come about?
Oh, it's so funny. How did the salon suite? So I had opened up my salon in 2014, and it was this building, but it was already like office spaces upstairs, and I remember doing my grand opening, it was a young lady who's a really good friend of mine, Erica, and she went upstairs, and we was looking. I was like, I was thinking about opening, and she was like, you should do salon suites. Like, she took the words out of my mouth, and I was like, you're right, I should. So, like, a year later, I was like, you know what, I'm probably going to open up some, I opened up the suites upstairs, and then that kind of was successful, so every year I started to expand and add on more suites, because I like the concept of salon suites, because it's like that one step for somebody who wants to open up a salon but just not ready yet, or some people that don't want to go through like the whole the high risk or even doing an investment in opening up a salon. So you actually get to see people evolve as entrepreneurs and business owners in the salon suite space if it's used correctly.
And now, you own this building that your salon suites is in, correct? Okay.
So, when you said you had your grand opening for the salon, so how many chairs were in your salon?
I had four chairs in the salon, and keep in mind, I was only 24 when I opened up the salon. So me evolving as a business owner, understanding how that whole salon booth rental things work, it took some growing and learning to do. So I feel that the salon suites was more successful than actually the salon because people wanted to work by themselves. I don't feel like I was ready to lead a team in a correct way, and I'm still learning. I have two amazing stylists in Baltimore right now, and then I have stylists in Baltimore. But I say that to say it was just, I don't know, running the salon is just different than running the salon. So it's just like two different dynamics. So it's just a lot to learn with both industries. I feel like both of them are like night and day.
Which do you prefer?
I actually prefer both of them because I think this has been a question that's been going around the internet like a lot. Like, so people hate salon suites and people love salon suites. I think it's a stylist for salon suites, and then I think it's a stylist for the salon. When you talk about bringing back the salon culture and putting, like, people in an open space together, it has to be the right vibe, and it has to be, like, the right setting so that it's a positive setting and not a negative setting because you've all been in salons where you was like, girl, I'm not going back in there. And
you don't want that.
So, I mean, it's personalities. It's a lot of different things that you have to make sure are aligned when you put people in the space. And some people just don't feel like being around people every day. So if that's the type of person, then possibly the salon suite, somebody that has, like, not even personality issues, but some people might have special needs clients where their clients have hair loss, and that's all they specialize in, and they don't feel comfortable being in an open space. So those people absolutely would want to have, like, a private room that specializes in clients that have alopecia and stuff like that. So it's so many different reasons why both models work really well. You just have to figure out what works best for you and your clients and, like, your long-term goals.
Speaking of that, when you were growing up in your mother's salon or and your aunt's salon, back in those days, were they doing, what did they call it? They weren't booth renting. They were...
commission. They were commission.
Commission?
Doing commission, but for the most part, people was doing booth rent. Because I think a lot of stylists aren't really... Yeah, I don't think they're educated on the difference between, like, a real commission-based salon and booth rental. Some people... was just building their clientele, so they'll say, can I do commission? But that's not really how commission really works. You are an employee. If you do commission, the salon owner provides all of the products. You literally just bring your tools, and you're paid, like, an hourly salary or something like that, and then you get, like, a commission off of certain things. Like, it's different dynamics, but for the most part, all the salons I grew up in, and my mom opened the salon as well, we were all booth renters.
Okay. Yeah, I just remember back in the day going to a lot of, you know, when I was, the different salons that I did go to, they were all commissioned. And then eventually or at least for me, it was new to me when that whole booth rent concept came about. But sounds like it's really been going on longer than I knew about. But like you said, I mean, I guess it works, whatever works best for the salon owner, I guess, is how they decide to go about it, whether it's commission or booth rent.
Yeah, believe it or not, every salon owner, honestly, if I wasn't a stylist, I don't know how the salon concept of booth rent would work because unless you have about 10 to 15 booths, it's not that profitable. I mean, you guys know I also have an extensions company, so I use my stores and salons more so as retail spaces where I'm able to, like, you know, generate revenue and stuff like that. But the most profitable salons are going to be commission-based always because while I make money on Saturday, we usually make money every day. So most booth rental salons, you'll see the owner working inside of the salon because that's the only way that it's profitable to them.
Gotcha. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of advice would you give to a hairstylist who may be maybe working at one of your salons and they want to leave the salon and start their own business, what kind of advice would you give them?
It's crazy. I have, like, two stylists right now that's transitioning out of salon suites and going into salons, and I'm, like, kind of coaching them through any questions that they have so they don't make the same mistakes that I did. Most of the time what I tell people is if that's your goal, just always plan for that goal. But in the same sense, treat your salon suite essentially like it's already your business. So that when you transition out to the salon, you already know pretty much how your systems are going to work. Get your pricing down, come up with your budget, because first you have to know your financials before you do anything. And just all pay yourself and do all those different things. But most importantly, I think the idea of opening a salon looks good, but nobody really thinks about the small things and, like, how much your overhead is going to cost financially. Do your breakdown. Just, like, really, really dive deep into your finances and just set up some goals so that you don't go in it, like, you know what I mean, feeling overwhelmed and stuff. Definitely for the salon suite owners, treat your salon suite like your salon. Pay yourself every week. Start hiring your people, whether it be your assistant. Make sure you have your LLC set up. Make sure you have your business account set up. Talk to accountants. Just talk to different people and get a scope of work before you go into it. That would be my advice. And it would make your process a lot smoother. Like, try to see if you can already start, like, working up a team, like, put it in people's ear, like, hey, I'm opening a salon in 6 months. I would like you as a stylist. Would you like to come on board? So I'm trying to get people, like, pre-lease your spaces. That's a big thing. So you're walking the door already trying to get some return on the money that you've already invested. That would be my advice. And also get a mentor. Like, I mentor a lot of people that I don't even say anything about it. But get a mentor, somebody that's already been there, done it, that's not scared to share the information with you and actually listen to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's switch gears a little bit, still talking about hair, but I want to talk a little bit about hair care and extensions. So you have an extension line. First of all, tell us, I mean, how are you doing it? That business is amazing. Like, people selling hair all over the place. Why do you think that is so popular?
I mean, I feel like hair extensions is like an accessory. It's like your favorite pair of earrings now. Like, it's so many different techniques and textures. I just feel like it's a way to give, like, an instant change. So people will forever love, like, hair extensions, wigs, anything. You could just change it just like that versus, you know, having to sit and wait years for your hair to grow back. Your hair can be healthy, but then you also can make it longer in the process while you're growing out your hair. So I think that's why people love hair extensions. When I cut my hair and I'm growing it back, I'm definitely putting in a weave and waiting for it to grow back. So, like, I mean, people just like changing up their looks, especially black women. We're going to be blonde. We're going to be red. We're going to do all these different things with our hair. But sometimes your hair won't be able to hold its integrity if you're coloring it that much. But the extensions give you the flexibility to be able to do that.
What is it about? What is it about, like, weaving your hair that helps it to grow? Is it the hair being braided?
I think it's just that you're not really putting any heat or any damages on there, but you can also get a weave and your hair can come out. So it's just a combination of things, and that all comes full circle about choosing the right stylist and having a good stylist. Like, it's the braiding, but then it's also, are you getting your trims, your treatments in between those installs? Is your hair being braided too tight? Like, all of those different things can change the process of it growing. And then also you have to make sure that your client is doing her part, which is maybe drinking a lot of water and making sure she's getting the right nutrients and, you know, taking supplements or stuff that helps her hair grow as well, because it's like a team effort when you're doing a hair growing back process.
Nice. Thinking of hair extensions, I have a couple questions. So how do you care for, if your hair is natural, how do you care for your natural hair when wearing extensions? Whether it's a weave or whether it's just some clip-ins, how should you be caring for your natural hair?
Well, for your natural hair, like I said, it's the same thing. I would, if you have natural hair, depending on your texture, I would more than likely recommend that you get, like, clip-ins if you're going to wear clip-ins, something that's closer to your texture, so that you're not always constantly trying to straighten it to make it match the extensions. And, like, everything is the same. Make sure you're getting your hydration treatments. Make sure you're getting your trims. And make sure you're still taking care of your scalp and your hair in between those like, shampooing your hair every 2 weeks. Even if you have a install, any type of extensions, you still have to shampoo your scalp and make sure your scalp is healthy.
Gotcha. Now, what about if your natural hair has been color treated and now you're wearing some form of extensions? How should you be caring for it? So let's say if your hair has been color treated and then you have a weave.
Most of the time, though, with me, I'm definitely that stylist that's going to tell you exactly not what you want to hear. So if you have just colored your hair, I'm not going to recommend that you put your hair right up if you're not already taking care of your hair or if it's not being already properly treated or if it's not in its healthiest state. And someone that just colored their hair, let's say blonde, I'm not going to recommend that they put they colored it yesterday and put the weave over top of it unless I know that they're already taking care of their hair. And I'm probably going to recommend that they take it down in 4 weeks versus, like, 6 to 8 weeks just to make sure the integrity of their hair is still doing good and it's not drying out.
Gotcha. How do you feel about, because that's I've always heard different stylists say different things over the years. How do you feel about people using oil and people using hair grease in their hair?
What do you mean, like to curl their hair?
not to curl it, but you know, like people on their scalps, they're using hair grease or oil.
I think it's a preference thing. I do both. Especially when I do my braids downs, I use grease and I have used oil for the scalp. I mean, your scalp, you have to put something in your scalp so that it's not dry. I mean, like, if you wear your natural hair out, of course you don't want it to be greasy, so you should use probably something lighter. But I like both.
Okay.
So I like old school stuff.
I've
like
heard,
sometimes
I've
I
heard
just, yeah. I like a lot
I've
of different older products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard some hairstylists say, you know, you shouldn't be using grease on your scalp. And I would always think to myself, well, why not? People did it a long time ago. Like,
yes.
Before
I mean,
all these,
like,
other fancy products were out, that's what they were
yes,
using.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. Like, a lot of this stuff is coming back, but you have to, I mean, everybody has a preference, so I don't think one is wrong or right per se, but come on now, everybody here was flourishing, growing with relaxers, without relaxers, many years ago, and we was using these products and they were working. So even sometimes if I'm like got a little bit breakage on my edges, I might use some sulfur or some baby don't go bold, and that stuff come right back. So I believe in all of those. I believe in all of that.
Okay, gotcha. All right, so at what point did you start, because you have the salons and you got the hairlines, at what point did you start working for television, doing hair for television?
So, like, I had first moved to Atlanta when I was, like, 20, and I had met a girl named Erica Diaz, which we're still good friends to this day, and she was working on Love & Hip Hop. Atlanta, and I was just doing hair in the salon. I had found a salon and started working in here, and I ended up meeting her at Atlantic Station, passing out some business cards, because this one, passing out business cards, you can get clients like that, and she ended up being an assistant on Love & Hip Hop, and she recommended me to do the hair for the show, and that was my first introduction to working in any type of television. So fast forward, I was working in the salon, and Tracy Moss was working there. And we just instantly, like, clicked, and I didn't know anything about the television and film world. But she was, like, took me under her wing. She was, like, really admired the way that I did hair, and I was young, and we was working in the same salon together. So she kind of mentored me, like, over the years about that side of it, because we both know that reality TV and then television and film is just two different worlds. Like, I literally had to just start from scratch when I went to that television and film versus reality TV. Let's start there. So then, I don't know, maybe 2019, right before the pandemic, Tracy, like, she was not in no rush to give me no job because she, like, you got to be ready because this is a different world. And now I understand what she means. But she gave me my first job of, did she give me, no, maybe 2019 she introduced me to Shanika Terry. And she gave me my first job on Mirror Easttown. And then the pandemic hit. So then I started and I was like so in love with, I remember my first day, I didn't have a set chair, I didn't have a set bag, I didn't have a coat. I had no idea that y'all be working outside and all that, all of the things. And I remember she giving me a chair, giving me a jacket. She was like, oh, baby, you look cute, but you're going to be cold. I'm like,
right,
I'm going to be cold. You're going to be working in the trailer. Like, no, you're going to be sitting outside in, like, 40-degree weather. But anyway, it shut down. And then after the pandemic, Tracy, I worked with her on Sweet Magnolias for a while. And then I got my first call to actually do, like, a full-time show, which was from Shanika, which I'm forever grateful for. I did Atlanta season 4. So that's pretty much how I got started into the TV and film world. But just, like, from recommendation, and then also just once I got in there, I was working, and she liked the way I worked, so we kept working.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what would be one of the biggest differences between, like, television and film world versus reality TV?
Girl, was not different. Oh, my God. It was like night and day.
Oh, trust me, I know. I just want the people listening to know.
Yes. Girl, so, like, when I came over to television and film, I was just so excited of just, like, the whole, like, the art behind it, just the creating of the characters. You got to think in reality TV is how they want their hair. And then when you work in television and film, you literally designing characters and you think you're doing pretty hair, but you're not. You're making people look homeless. You're doing all types of crazy stuff that I never even thought about from the outside looking in. But most importantly, the difference is the structure. Like, not to like say, like, reality TV was, like, the worst thing ever. But people are coming to work in television and film. So it's no showing up 3 hours late. Like, it's none of that. Like, we go on time schedules. We going for lunch at a certain time. I love the structure behind television and film versus reality TV. I would say that is the biggest difference. Knowing where you're going to be, getting call sheets, knowing exactly, you know, where you're going to be at for that day and all that stuff. You don't have that in reality TV.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Wow. So, okay, so now you're doing film and TV, but you still have these two salons, this hairline business, and the salon suite. How in the world are you managing it all?
Girl, don't ask me. So you're like, I don't know. But no, I would say that I have amazing, like, now, so now this year will be my year 10 anniversary, me opening the salon in Baltimore. And I'm finally at a place where I have a really good team of people that's helping me now, like, from assistants to property managers to just all around. I have an amazing team, and that's why I'm able to focus on what I really want to do more now, which is the television and film part. But that is the only way I'm able to even manage is by having a team. Like, you can't do anything without a team. Like, for so long, I feel like I was a one-man band, and now I'm just trusting a little bit more and, like, having people, having a team is the only way I'm able to do it. I'm literally nothing without my team now.
Absolutely. Well, what kind of advice would you give someone coming out of the salon and trying to work on a film and television set for the first time in terms of those people who may own a salon and now they want to work in film and TV and still keep their salon, and then just people who just work in the salon, now they're leaving that life behind and want to come into the film and TV world. What kind of advice would you give them?
I feel like the biggest advice I would give for, like, the salon owner is the separation between the two. Like, make sure that when you go into this, you go into this not as, oh, I'm a salon owner and, I try my hardest, and I think I like to separate the two. Like, when I go to work, I'm at work. When I leave work, I'm a salon owner. So understanding the difference between the two, because the two have nothing to do with each other in no type of way. When you get there and you're working on a team and you're working with somebody, whether you're starting in background, whether you're starting as a third, whatever, that is the only thing that's important in getting the work done and understanding what it's like to be a part of the team. Like, you have to go in it. And my biggest thing for anybody that wants to be in television and film is to leave your ego at home, because it's going to be times where you walk on that set and you have no idea. You have to be open to learn. You're going to have to be open to listen to other people. And especially coming from a salon owner, you have to make sure that you don't get the lines blurred because you think you know everything in this part. You don't know everything in this part. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that
absolutely.
Type of thing.
I'm sorry.
Huh? Go ahead.
I was gonna add not just that, but also timing. You know, because I used to see it a lot with barbers who were just coming out of the barbershop and starting film and television. They thought they had a whole hour to cut somebody's hair, and you don't have that kind of time. You know what I mean?
No.
So you got to get your timing down too, and be able to, like, really know, like you spoke about having a call sheet in film and TV. You know, really looking at that call sheet and really studying it and trying and figuring out, you know, when a certain actor is going to come to you, you know, when they need to be on set. So you need to know you need to be able to get them finished so that they can go through makeup, or they can go through costumes, get their clothes on so that they could be ready at the time that is on that call sheet. So it's just really, you know, kind of really understanding the whole flow of it all.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was one of the biggest lessons that I learned from Tracy. Like, she was, like, when I first, my first introduction into television and film, that was the biggest thing. She was like, sit here and learn this call sheet. Understand what a one-liner is. Like, you really have to know all of these things, because your day will, like, you'll be very unsuccessful for that day if you don't know what's going on. Like, a lot of people don't realize it, though. A lot of television and film is understanding schedules, understanding the business side. Like, you're only an hour and 30 minutes of doing the hair, but the biggest part comes in the preparation of that day, like making sure we have everything we need for that day. So that's a big thing that I would say for any stylist that was trying to be in a television and film, is just make sure that you're organized and make sure that you understand preparation and just always stay ready, because you never know what's going to be thrown your way.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's, you know, it's good when you can enter into a business being led by other artists who are experienced at, you know, doesn't matter what level they're at, but they, you know, have more years in than you, and they're able to share their experiences and basically get you together, you know, and that's really good.
Yeah, that's a blessing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I feel like, I know when I first started in the business, before getting in the union, and I know you know her, Debbie Young in Baltimore, like, she's the one who even told me about the union. And, you know, but just working with her, doing, like, a lot of jobs with her, and just learning stuff from her, you know, when I was eligible for the union and got in the union, I pretty much knew how to carry myself on set, even though I had never been on a, you know, like a feature film set or, you know, or episodic television set. You know, I worked on, like, independent.
No, set etiquette. I'm glad you said that, because set etiquette is a really big thing. Like, you definitely have to understand what that is. Like, that's something that you would have to, like, take training or class on, because people honestly don't know what that is.
Right. I remember, like, I used to do independent. I used to work. I used to assist Debbie. And this was all volunteer. I used to go on independent film sets with her and work. I used to I used to go to, like, we did a lot of local television, like Kwaisi and Fumi. Debbie worked with him a lot, and he did a show called The Bottom Line on WBAL. So I used to go and assist her with that show every week. And then we did another local television show. Once a month, we would shoot like 5 shows in one day. And then when Debbie went to do The Wire, those shows became my shows by myself. But you know what I mean? So
oh,
by
man.
That time, like, I had already learned everything that I needed to learn to be able to be there by myself. And so then when I got the opportunity to come on a set of The Wire, I had gotten into the union. And when I had a chance to come to The Wire, my very first union job, basically I was told, like, when I got to set, I was told, you know, like, what last looks meant, you know, you know, when they say rolling, you know, turn your phone off. All this stuff. And then when I was in, I was started off, you know, of course, in background. So in background, like, they gave us, like, well, I had the call sheet, but they gave us sides. And basically, you know, I was told, like, different things about that. Like, these are the people that you're going to have to work on. So I learned how to read that part of the call sheet. And so only thing I did was just kind of study it a little bit. Then when I got to set, they told me certain things. This is what last looks means. This is what this means. Just go in, do your touches real fast, and come back out, you know. And then, you know, the more you have opportunities to do it, and if you just sit and watch and observe instead of trying to be seen, you know, you can pick up on a lot of things. And you really, at this point, when you've had somebody teaching you before you even get the opportunities, then it's not, like, foreign to you once you get there, you know.
Absolutely.
So that was kind of how it was for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yep. Having a mentor is definitely, to me, is definitely key, is very essential to being in television and film. I think anybody that's entering into that television and film world would definitely need a mentor, or if they're, I mean, like, hopefully they can find a mentor that's willing to teach them the same things that they already have experienced or known. So I think that's very important.
Yep, absolutely. What would be your, like, your ideal dream job for television and film?
That's a good question.
Or to work with, or is there anybody in particular you would love to work with that you haven't worked with?
No, I think, I don't know if I have an ideal dream job yet. I'm just enjoying the process because, I mean, on that side of it, I'm still, like, kind of fairly new, which would be, like, 5 years in. And I think I'm just excited for all the sets that I work on. My ideal, I would love to do, like, a feature film, like a big movie, because I've been doing a lot of episodics. So that's the only thing that I'm looking forward to now is actually being able to do like, a film. But I actually enjoy every project I work on now, and I think the more I dive deeper into it, I'll start to see, like, which direction I really want to go in as far as, like, which shows I can't wait to work on and stuff like that. Only thing I do, I'm a fan of, like, the whole, like, BMFs and all them. Like, I would like to work on one of those shows just because I love the actual show.
Right. So, working on one of your favorite shows.
Yeah, so it would probably be that, like, working on one of my favorite shows.
Yeah. Well, that would be good. What has been one of your, what would you say has been one of your biggest challenges working on set?
I don't know if it's pretty much any challenges, but I feel like, again, like, learning, just being in a learning process, like, thinking that, you know, the way that you do stuff in a salon and the way that you do stuff in television and film is two totally different. Like, being under Shanika and she telling me to do certain things a certain way just because of how the camera reads, I don't think it was a challenge. It's more so it's something that I had to learn, like, understanding shapes and why we're going to do it this way versus not do it that way. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a challenge as much as just unlearning certain things and learning new things.
Gotcha.
That's pretty much
now,
it.
Speaking of that, though, was it hard for you to, because you know how in the salon you're doing somebody's hair, and it's like once they get out of that chair, that hair is perfect. Was
mm-hmm.
that hard for you on set, learning that it doesn't have to be perfect? It just has to be
yes,
right.
Yes, that was challenging for me because I'm such a perfectionist. And, like, understanding that when you build in a character, like, we want them to look messed up. Like, I think one week we had to do a mom that looked like a junkie. So Shanika mm-hmm. was like, oh, just let her hair go. But to me, I'm like, oh, man, I want to fix that curl. I want that curl to come down a little bit. But that's not the character. It's just, like, understanding that part was a little bit challenging. So sometimes I find myself trying to make it pretty, and you can't make certain things, you don't make it pretty.
Right, exactly. Like that's how I always describe it. It doesn't have to. It's not supposed to be perfect. It's just supposed to be right. And right meaning in terms of what this character is and how this character is supposed to look, and making sure we're giving the director and the producers what they want to see. And sometimes you have like in background. Sometimes you fall into that. That's why I love background because. You know, like when my sister and I first started in this business, that's where you would find us, in the background. And, you know, and thankfully we did a lot of period pieces over the years. Like when we first started out, we did a lot of period work, which is very specific. But I think it really helped. It helped, grew us as artists. And
absolutely.
But always I tell people when it comes to the background, it's the same concept. Like, if you can get that down, then the more you grow in this industry and the more your positions grow and change, like, you know, you
mm-hmm.
your third or, you know, whatever, just nailing that background and getting that right really helps you as you move up. You
absolutely.
Know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Some people don't understand that, and they want to get into this business, and the first thing they want to do is want to be working
being
on the trailer. Like that's that's like their number one goal.
And that's a part of also like when I talk about leave your ego at home, because today you might be in background, the next day you might be a third, the next day you might be a key, the next day you might be in background. But I absolutely love all of the different positions because each position you're kind of learning something different. And definitely the background is where you can learn the most because, you might have a 500 people background day where you don't have time to do nothing but just keep on rolling. And that the background to me is just as important as any position that you might play for that day.
Gotcha. Yep, you're
so
right.
So you have to treat every role the same, like, you know what I'm saying? You literally
absolutely.
Have to have the same integrity with everything you do. Like, you can't just be like, oh, I'm in background today, I'm chilling. Like, no. You're in background, you're still working. What somebody told me a long time ago was, like, you know, you treat every position the same. Like, whether you're in the background, you work because you never know. That might be the next person. You might be working next to
that's
a department
right.
head that's just in background for the
that's
day.
Right.
And you never know who watching you or be like, oh, I like how she worked on my next show. I'm going to see if I can bring her on. Like, so you have to always be on your toes.
Not just that, but mm-hmm. that background actor you're working with may be, the next superstar in 3 years. And we'll remember you being in that background.
Absolutely.
Or a producer in 10 years and remember you.
Right,
so you
absolutely.
Just
yeah. Yep, I agree 1,000%. Like, it's always changing. But some people, you have to get in it to understand that part of it, like how roles change drastically, quickly. You just never know.
Next to last question. It's been a lot of talk.
Okay.
Well, it's been some talk more recently. But this has been going on for several years. What do you think about deregulation and taking away licenses for beauty professionals like cosmetologists, nail techs, massage therapists?
We were having this conversation not too long ago, but I'm absolutely against that. And I think a lot, I don't know where that's coming from, but I definitely think, especially coming out of school, high school, all these different things, some level of training needs to be had for the development of a hairstylist as well, whether, you know, it be from in school or apprenticing under someone. But I think taking away the licenses will take away that growth period of training and understanding, like, chemicals and all that different stuff, hair colors. I definitely think that that is, like, not a good idea. Like, I wouldn't want certain professionals working on me without being licensed or something, like, in a certain capacity. Like, I'm not going to act like I haven't been there, but I would definitely, like, let a girl that didn't have a license, like, put a weave or something in my hair, but I probably wouldn't go to somebody to actually color my natural hair that never had a license before because, mm-hmm. like, you know, you can have a chemical reaction. What about strand tests? What about all those things that are taught in school? I don't think that that's a good idea.
Right. I totally agree. I had a nail tech say that she doesn't care if they take away the license because, you know, she would just really go into educating people more. I get that standpoint that you would just go in and teach classes so that these people get the education that they need. But I also, the part that I can't forget about is the fact that also the license proves that you went before the state and showed them what you knew. And they approved of you. You know what I'm saying? They approved of you having a license. So just like you just talked about, when it gets to the point where you're talking about the use of chemicals and things like that, because just like you, you grew up in the salon already knowing how to braid, using Marcel irons, you know, at a very young age. People know how to use those tools, but it's mm-hmm. more than using tools. But you know, it's more than using tools. So it's also about
way
the chemicals.
More,
and, yeah, and those kind of things. So, but I totally agree with what you said, for sure. All right, last question. what is your definition of beauty?
Oh, that's a good question. Definition of beauty?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Definition of beauty, to me, is just all things that make you feel good. Beauty can be defined not only by how your appearance is, but how your heart is. Mm-hmm. All different things to me. Like, beauty is just not defined by a physical appearance. So beauty to me mm-hmm. is just being a good person, not only on the outside, but in the inside. And that to me is beauty.
Nice.
I love it.
Nice.
Thank you so much, Char.
Thank you guys for having me. This was so much fun.
Yes,
of course,
it was.
Of course.
You did it very well. we're going to have you back on at some point after you do that dream job. After you do my dream job,
yes. Working on one of my favorite shows, it had to be my dream job.
Yes, so you can come back and tell us all about it.
After you do that first big movie.
Yeah, that first big movie, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it. Just being able to be on the platform and be able to talk about, like, a lot of people don't know a lot of different things I do, so I'm appreciative to be able to even share.
Absolutely.
Well, thank
we
you.
Great,
we appreciate
you. We are so grateful for you being on and sharing, so thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right.
Have
so you guys
wonderful
enjoy
night.
Your rest of your time. You too.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We greatly appreciate it. Another big thank you to Char Wilson, hairstylist. Greatly appreciate her. I just really enjoyed listening to her story about growing up in the hair salon. Oh my goodness. It's like every direction she turned was hair in her family. So that's amazing and it's wonderful. And I loved hearing her talk about how, you know, some of these old school concepts and just still using some of those old school ways, which is really good because things have really, really changed. Just like she said, it's, you know, the world has changed and how people function and operate, and, you know, people talk through text messaging and, you know, and then nowadays with the hairstylist, it's like all these rules and you got to book online and it's just a lot. Whereas before, just like she said, she'll take you the next very next day if you text her and say, hey, can I come tomorrow? So it's like there's a lot that's not going on like that anymore. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. But it was kind of good to hear that, that some people still operate that way. So that means
right.
that they're talking to their clients and they're engaging with their clients. So that's kind of, that's good to hear. So, again,
right.
thank you guys for that. And thanks, Char, one more time. Thank you for those who will listen to this show on the playback. We greatly appreciate you guys. I'm not sure if we're going to have a show next Sunday night or not. We may. We'll keep you posted. But because of the Easter holiday, I'm not sure if we're going to do it or not. But we will let you know as it gets closer. But, again, we thank you and we appreciate you. You can follow us. Let me let my sister
handle
this.
I'll take care of it.
No, yeah, you take care of this.
I'll take care of it.
You can follow us on Facebook. We're Beauty Talk Online on Instagram, or X, as they call it. We are beauty_talk. On Instagram, we are beauty_talk_media.
And you can follow
right.
us both, Janice and Denise, just basically by our names, at Janice Tunnell, at Denise Tunnell. That's JaniceTunnell. And I'm DeniseTunnell. And that's on all platforms.
And I forgot to tell Char to shout out her social media handles and her website. But her website is hairbyshar.com, and that's how you can find her on all social media outlets. All right, Char is C-H-A-R. Again, thank you to Char Wilson and to all of you who tuned in tonight. We greatly appreciate you. Let's do it again, possibly next Sunday, and if not, the Sunday after that. Have a wonderful evening and have a beautiful and blessed week, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Mm-hmm.